I am tense. And the music doesn't help. Yeah, the music constantly eerie, constantly keeping you on edge.
Boom, boom.
But just that feeling of not knowing. It's almost like...
Boom, boom.
Stop it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to an exciting 8-Bit Horror Fest edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
John Ruth, the Hangman.
Are you being real molasses-like over there?
Don't make me horse laugh.
Oh, I heard the mustache. Not only whenever MacReady comes on screen, I feel it in my bones.
Your boners.
I feel it in the boners. But yes, I am your host, Ben, joined with me as always, Gus, the brother of the brother of the brother, sir
with honors. With
honors over there.
Jack Burton.
Jack Burton. Oh. Who's Jack Burton?
That's me.
That's me.
I think that's
I'm like, who?
Who? I think that's the line. That's in Big Trouble in Little China. Jack Burton.
I've never seen Big
Who's
China.
Who's Jack Burton? That's me.
Whoa.
That's it. Oh, there Another it is. Jack, or Jack, John Carpenter classic.
With none other than...
Kurt Russell's mustache, but no mustache is to be... Kurt Russell's mullet.
I'm convinced that Kurt Russell was actually two separate beings. There's Kurt Russell.
He's two things.
He's two things, yeah. His beard is like, it wants to survive. It's like that Codename Kids Next Door episode. I don't know if you remember where like there was like mustaches were their own people. Like they would like latch on to children and take them over and make them adults. Like Whoa. Facial hair.
That's deep.
That's what Kurt Russell is.
Is that their play on the thing?
Yeah, basically. Maybe. I don't know. They did have a Jaws episode, which was a sea of asparagus.
Yummy.
Yay. But we're not here to talk about Codename Kids Next Door.
Aw, shucks.
No. No, we are not. If you are new to our podcast here, we are the Brothers Movie Factory. What we do is every week we take to the podcast, we watch a film that is from the past, we then discuss that film, talk about what's good, talk about what's bad, what we liked, what we didn't like. Then we take to the factory. That is where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? And then at the end, we usually like to ask a few questions here and there. Sometimes related to the film, sometimes completely unrelated, but who cares?
It's our show.
It's our show, yeah. So we have the power. But yes, today we are doing a special episode for the 8-Bit Horror Fest for 8-Bit Geeks show. They are a great podcast if you've never heard of them and this is the first time you're checking them out. Or if you're listening to us for the first time via their show. Just quick plug for them here, the 8BitGeek.com. Go over there, check out all of their shows. You'll see links to their flagship show, The 8-Bit Geek. Other shows such as 8-Bit Saga, Divas Dropkicks and Dives. They have tons of shows, all extremely entertaining. Divas Dropkicks and Dives, wrestling podcast, 8-Bit Saga. They're playing some Star Wars D&D. It's hilarious. 8-Bit Geek is how I was introduced to them. Good show. Lots of nerd news, fun topics they go over. You can also go onto their website, find their Discord. It's a great community. I'm a part of it. That's actually how I reached out to them. They're really active, play games, have community events. It's a great place to be. I really enjoy being a part of that community. You can also hit them up over on Patreon. You find them there. They are giving you content for just as little as $5 a month. You're getting things like the diner.
The thing.
You're getting things like The Diner, which is a variety show they do. You're getting extended editions of The 8-Bit Geek, which is my personal favorite thing I get from being a Patreon member.
Things.
thing. Yes. And then another thing you get is blooper reels from 8-Bit Saga. So all really interesting stuff, all really good content. You're getting that on Patreon, as little as $5 a month. But yes, indeedly do. Here we are for 8-Bit Horror Fest. Very excited to be here. This year's theme, this week's theme, this year's theme, damn it, is reboots. Reboots and at. And as we were kind of discussing what were we going to do, what did we want to do, what's a good reboot, you had the idea to do 1982, John Carpenter masterpiece, The Thing, because technically it is a reboot of a horror series, correct?
Yeah, well,
or not a series, but a horror movie.
Correct. 1951's The Thing from Another World. Yes, indeed.
They said bitch, though.
And many years later, this movie spawned a prequel in 2011.
Sadly. Starring Joel Edgerton.
And the dude from Dumb and Dumber, and what's that TV show?
Oh, NCIS, Los Angeles.
And
with Robin.
What's her name? Oh, from Mona Flowers. Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Winslet.
Not Captain Marvel.
Weinstead. I can't remember first name.
You're like pointing at me like
you should know.
You're like, I'm like, I've seen that movie once.
Yes, you know who. Yes, indeed. But 1982's gem of a film, The Thing, starring Kurt Russell in that.
And his beard, not his mustache. Yeah.
And it also stars a sponsorship with J&B Scotch.
Mm-hmm. And Coors.
And Coors, the banquet beer. So, yeah, tonight was your first night watching this 80s horror film. What first thoughts?
I thought it was extraordinarily effective and what it set out to do, which I feel like, in a sense, this horror film is almost, instead of trying to invoke horror, it's trying to intense suspense and, like, dread in you. Like, you're feeling increasingly suspended. Like, you're like, I am terrified of every, like, what could
I
happen.
I am tense.
And the music doesn't help. Yeah, the music constantly eerie, constantly keeping you on edge. But just that feeling of not knowing. It's almost like... Stop it. It's almost like Jaws, in a sense, where, like, Jaws, the big, like, the big scare of Jaws is that you don't see the monster that much, where in, like, this movie, you do see the monster, but it's almost like you don't know where it is.
You don't know who it is.
Which is really, like, really effective. And also the setting. Like, is there any place on Earth, like... There probably is, so don't quote me on this, but that's, like, as isolated as Antarctica. Like, even, like, you go out, because you could say, like, why don't they go outside? Well, they can't, because they'll die. Like, they'll freeze to death. And, like, why don't they call for help? Well, they're in Antarctica. Like, nowadays, it might not be as effective, but...
And there's that scene early on where one of the paranoid, facility... What would you call him?
Wilford Brimley and his diabetes.
Yeah, Wilford Brimley, he has a diabetes fit, and he, he just
Is
breaks
that what
it.
Happens?
Yeah, he didn't have his insulin, and he just broke everything.
Here, calm down. your blood sugar's all out of whack.
Eat a Snickers. You're not yourself when you're hungry.
Takes it, he grows his mustache back.
Yeah. And
don't do that.
Early on he busts everything up, so there's no communication. That's just great. Now
see,
what are
it's just Jaws. It's just Jaws
in Antarctica.
Yeah.
I first saw this movie almost 10 years ago. I was also a late bloomer to this. I saw it when I was in college. But I made the mistake of falling asleep to this. Yeah. I'd watch
you
a little.
Said that. I'm like, why?
I watch a little bit of it every night.
It's almost as bad as falling asleep to Ghostbusters 2 and waking up at the Winston.
I did that recently. Yeah. That was not good.
Like, oh my.
This is. I haven't seen every movie out there, but this is one of the grossest movies I've ever seen.
It's pretty rough.
Yeah, there's some gross stuff.
And the fact that it's all practical makes it like this is one of those examples of. The practical effects where they're better than anything CGI could have probably done.
Oh, for sure. Like, for sure.
Did it win any awards for its practical effects?
Do you know? Some loud noises.
I don't like noises anymore. I'm scared.
Let's see. I don't know. I think it was nominated for its effects. It should have been. I'm about to pull it up here on the old
Because that's an issue that the prequel that came out in 2012 had, is it was originally going to be mostly practical, and I think it was issues with the studio, issues with time, issues with budget that pushed them away from practical effects. And it's like a CGI fest, that one. Because I'd seen the prequel. I'd never seen the original. Because I went into...
Choke yourself.
I went into the prequel thinking that... Thinking? Sorry.
Jeez.
Anyways, I went into it thinking that it was a remake, not a prequel. Not a continuation, but like a...
Yeah.
A retelling of the first part. And...
They don't make it easy when they title it The same thing, yeah.
The Thing, Rebirth.
The same thing.
That would be fantastic. That should be the sequel.
The same thing.
And that. But I watched that thinking that it was a remake, and it's not. And once I finished it, I went into starting this film, and I realized that it picks up literally like because it ends, the 2012 ends with them taking off in a helicopter and chasing out after this dog, and that's how this movie starts.
Yeah.
It starts like Predator, but regardless, it starts. And so I realized that it wasn't a remake that way. Right.
Did not get nominated for any Oscars.
Academy to choke themselves.
It came out in 82. I didn't look it up, but I'm sure in 82, best special effects went to like E.T., something like that. But a prominent award that this was nominated for was a Razzie Award for Worst Score.
Well, the music's so effective.
I love
that's like
score.
The biggest part is like the music is helps to keep you on edge because there really is not good. A lot of music. That's the thing.
There's some.
There's just enough. It's effective. Like that's why I'm saying like it keeps you on the edge of your seat throughout. You're like ugh. Like, and when it's like one of those two where it, like the Jaws theme. When the Jaws theme hits, you know someone's fucked. Mm-hmm. Like it's like that. It like starts hitting. You're like all right, something's about to happen.
There was a scene where it was panning, the camera was panning over. It was just like the hallway and the stairs, and you're like, I don't like this, but the music was playing, like, dun, dun. You're like, ugh.
Yeah. Like, I feel like this is what it's like when I wake up in the middle of the night and have to go pee. I open my bedroom door, and I'm like, nah, I don't have to pee.
Now you hear that every time.
I open it, and I'm boom, boom, like, fuck. Shut the door.
You know, another reason we just touched on that this movie is so effective was the special effects, the practical effects.
Oh, yeah.
Would you believe me if I told you these were done by a 22-year-old?
I would, because they're innovative.
They were innovative. this young man was a big fan of John Carpenter. He saw...
he should be.
He saw Halloween, and he's like, I gotta work with John Carpenter someday. And he ended up finagling his way onto The Fog, I believe. Shortly after he got the job for The Thing, John Carpenter did with the studio, and he brought on Rob
Pattinson.
I wish is Batman
Redford.
Rob Bottin.
Ah,
and
I was close.
Or it could be Boutine, something like that.
Poutine.
Boutine. Ah. Boutin.
Gotcha.
Bottin. We're from PA, so it's Bottin.
We're from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's Pittsburgh. It's Bottin. Rob Bottin, Rob Gronkowski, that jag. And
Jesus. What happened?
Pittsburgh.
Steelers lost today. Pissed.
World better. It's a rough day in the park. Yeah, he's 22, and yes, he was creating innovative special effects. Very effective. Still give me the willies today. Still, we're eating our dinner. I'm like, I'm good. Yeah. While we're watching this movie. Like,
I'm not drunk, but I gotta puke.
A fun story with his special effects. There's that infamous scene where the defibrillator is going through the guy's arms.
Yeah.
And then the head separates.
Yeah.
When the heads, like, separate and you're like, fifth jerk off of the day. That's what it's like.
That's what it's looking like. Some lotion would be nice.
There's like the neck tearing away and all like the green tendons. Actually, as a true innovator, I'm not a VFX or special effects creator, but I would have done something totally different. They had a contraption inside that was like melting plastic and chewing gum and
Chewing gum apart.
That too. But like paint thinners and things like fumes, things that would create toxic fumes. They're just melting them as they're ripping to create that look. So upon shooting, they're like, wait, didn't John Carpenter was like, well, didn't he just shoot the flamethrowers and there's fire everywhere? Like, yeah, so we need a little bit of fire underneath. So they got one of those tubes with the holes that put out a little gas and they light it so there could just be a little bit of flame under the frame while they're shooting. As soon as they start pulling the neck away and the fumes let out, they light the lighter and it's woof.
The whole head blew up.
No, the whole room blew up.
Oh, nice.
Because they had been shooting or getting ready to shoot. The fumes.
Nice.
So not only did everyone get
actually the shot they used for when he blows up the camp at the end.
Yeah.
Boom.
They're shooting everything B-roll fucking outside. Blows up. Tukush. Yeah, and it was like months of work to get that body set up, and it was just in flames.
Nice.
Ruined.
I was afraid it'd be ruined.
And that was the problem with this film a lot, was the special effects, although they turned out really well.
It's all about direction.
There's a few, I mean, one take could take all day, because if it was not right, they'd have to reset, and a lot of the special effects, you know, you gotta set them up and that. Including this one. Like I said, it took a month to set up this rig. Now they kind of knew what they were going to do, so it didn't take as long. But the scene where they do the defibrillator and the chest rips open, there's like those tentacles that shoot out and spit stuff. The first time they set it up, those tentacle things spat water out of them. So it just looked like a fountain.
Yeah.
Like a Vegas fountain.
Is that
as
what
they
was
put
doing?
It.
Like the water made it look like that?
It looked too pretty. Yeah. So they needed to set it up and do it again.
And it needs to look juicy.
Yeah. But that took like 6 hours to set up. So they had to do it again. And they got on the second take kind of deal.
Those tentacles are effective to make you like get the willies. You know,
you're like, how do they do that without CGI?
Yeah, the tongue, like when the head does separate and the tongue whips out, it's like, and it's like whipping around. I'm like, that just looks like they got like a fishing pole and they're like, yeah.
It's probably something like that. The character, his reaction to seeing that crab head crawling around is my reaction while watching this movie. Like, you gotta be fucking kidding.
You're like, yuck.
Yeah.
But let's talk about like the overarching story of the thing. Like, it is a remake of an OG film, but is it at all similar? Like, alien from space comes down, what they say, 10,000 years it was in the ice?
Something like that.
The Swedish team.
Norwegian, please.
I apologize.
For our Norwegian listeners.
Yeah. They pull the alien out. They're actually the people that are chasing the dog at the beginning, the last two survivors from the Norwegian camp. They are substantially killed by the Americans, because Americans are assholes, and they don't speak Norwegian. They allow this dog that they were chasing to come in and stay with all their huskies. And this dog just subsequently turns into the thing and starts attaching itself to things and other dogs and other animals and spreading. It's kind of spreads like a virus, and it can mimic other people, and it just wants to basically continue to mimic people and survive. It's like every atom of this thing, like every bit of the monster, is alive and like out for its own survival.
Yeah.
Like every drop of blood, which is like, in terms of a movie monster, that's terrifying, right? Like, it doesn't have a sole purpose. Its sole purpose is survival, but, like, it's not one sole purpose. Like, they burn the body and the head rips off because it's trying to survive. But, like, the body's dying. But then there's even that scene where they're doing the blood test, and he drops the blood, and the blood scatters. Like, psst, it, like, runs away. So you're like, the blood's there somewhere. Like,
it's still alive.
Yeah. So it's like the movie monster in this is just so effective in terms of, like, it's just it literally is like a skin crawler. Like, it can change into anything.
Even roommate Matt mentioned in the finale of this film, he's like, is that what the actual thing looks like? I'm like, I said it was like an amalgamation of everything, but I don't think it actually looks like anything.
No.
It's like
a Ditto. It's a Ditto. This is what Ditto does.
You want to know what that Q Pokemon does? This.
Yeah, Ditto's actually want to take over the fucking world. Ash didn't just win the Pokemon Championship. A Ditto did. As Ash.
Whoa. Yeah, but I think...
You want to know how he stayed 10 this long? That's how.
It's like a cellular thing. This thing.
I feel like talking about the movie The Thing is as difficult as talking about the movie It, because you're like, It does this, and It, and you're like, it is what is It? And you're like, it's It.
Exactly, honey.
Yeah.
Man, like, it's a what?
This thing's thing.
Doesn't like Christmas. So.
Thing doesn't like Christmas.
This was a very snowy movie. Had a little bit of whiskey, warm us up a little bit before we started the film.
Not any JB, though.
Nah, no scotch in that. Did you find this spooky enough to be included in, like, your Halloween runs, your Halloween marathons?
Oh, it's scary. It is suspenseful. I feel like it's almost, like, up there with Hateful Eight for me, though. Like, I want to watch this on a cold winter night.
Yeah.
Like, maybe more of a Thanksgiving film.
Somewhere in between.
Yeah, maybe somewhere in between. You watch it, like, right around, like, right before Christmas movies start. But right after scary movies start, right there. It's a horror movie.
November 1st.
Yeah. I mean, it is a scary movie. It has jump scares. It has, you know, a compelling, scary plot. I'm surprised that more films haven't tried to mimic it. More like big films, because I'm sure there's smaller films or other films that have tried to do similar things, like trying to figure out who is who and things like that.
Plenty of shows have done that. Ones I can think of off the top of my head. X-Files did one in their first season.
Supernatural was done episodes like
Supernatural that. Did one in, I think, season 6. Cowboy Bebop did one.
1, 2, 3, let's jazz.
And as you mentioned, yes. Codename Kids Next Door did one. Plenty have done the, like, who is the creature, who's the mimicker.
Yeah,
plenty of
this is that. This is, like, I don't know, there's something about too, like, a lot of horror movies, they have their cast of characters and they're killed off pretty quickly and they're all, like, kind of meaningless, but I feel like all the characters in this film all have their, like, own, like, compelling side. Like, you kind of, like, get to know all these characters and you get a feeling that, like, they're not all friends. They're, like, none of them, they're just kind of like colleagues that work together. Like, there's no one that actually, like, absolutely likes each other or cares about each other. But that's kind of what makes it interesting. Like, they're willing to turn on each other so quick. And that is kind of a study on human nature, in a sense. Like, when backed against the wall, like, what are you going to do? And these guys are all doing the same thing as the thing. They're trying to survive.
Maybe the thing is people.
There it is. If you excuse me, I have to go.
Go where?
To the thing.
What thing?
It.
What it?
Why?
What other adjectives?
Who?
The who?
The who? Yes, but it's just like the cast being, you know, all these different characters. You have no clue who is the thing. They have no clue, and everyone acts the same. No one acts weird. Everyone acts weird. That's the issue. No one acts normal.
Yeah, everyone's on edge. Everyone's tired. They don't trust each other.
Yeah. MacReady's going on 3 days of sleep. He's been chasing
no sleep.
Daisy Domergue across the snow.
That's right. Shit.
Trying to make some good coffee.
Even the ones that are, like, you know, I think there's something up with him. They're not it.
I know you gentlemen have been through a lot, but I would rather not spend my night tied to a fucking chair. I think that's what he says.
Couch.
Couch. Fuck. They're all the same thing. You sit in them.
I've seen that old guy in other shit, too. I can't think of what it is.
He's always bad.
I'm like, I've seen his eyebrows somewhere.
Ah. I've seen him shoot someone before in the head, in this film. It's like the first thing he does.
As soon as Wilford Brimley, his character's Dr. Blair, as soon as he shows up, and you're like, I haven't seen him since the Battle of Endor.
That's great. Like, is that Ewok Adventures 2?
Yes.
The Battle for Endor?
And the Search for More Money.
Yes. Yep. Star Wars. If you have never seen Star Wars Ewok Adventures or Ewok Adventures 2, don't. Sometimes find them on a double pack.
Just stay away.
I have fond memories of the first one.
I like Caravan of Courage.
Yeah. I have fond memories of the first one. Second one, not so much. No, but
second one's pretty rough. Second one has Wilford Brimley in it, so stay away.
Hey.
I
mean, I'll throw for you 8-bit listeners, I'll throw an 8-bit saga little nug in there. If Chub Rub was in Battle for Endor, be game over. Anyways, continue.
Okay.
That's their Ewok. Well, now, Gus doesn't know 8-Bit Saga. I do. Chub Rub would won.
What if...
He would won.
You threw an 8-Bit Saga thing in there. How about we throw a Brothers Movie Factory in here? Who would Jimmy Stewart? If he was in this movie, who'd he be? Yeah.
Jimmy Stewart.
Would he live?
He would be the dog. He'd come in and be like, those motherfuckers were chasing me.
They're shooting at me.
I didn't even do anything. I just tried to get pet, and I barked a couple times when they were eating, and they scared me off. Or he's MacReady. We got to go up to my shed. When I left, I shut my lights off. I care about the electric bill. We're out here in Antarctica. We can't worry about losing power.
Here's a true, real talk question. What were they doing there in Antarctica?
I don't know. You said researching.
Said United States Research Facility. What are they researching?
Like, let's not look too far into it.
Yeah. There's snow here. What is the snow stuff made of?
They're actually the people that are working for Weyland Industries and uncover the temples in Alien vs. Predator.
That's it. That's the thing.
I recently rewatched that movie, and I regretted it.
Did you?
Yeah, a little bit. It's not that good. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No. We're here about talking other aliens.
I don't know what they're searching for. Aliens?
No.
Aliens?
I think they're just doing Antarctic research, whatever that means.
It's temperatures.
They're reading temperatures.
I mean, you get down to it. You had, like, the leader guy, the old guy. You had doctors there. You had scientists. You had a dog trainer. And then MacReady, who's played by Kurt Russell, is just like a helicopter pilot, but he's like the boss, basically, or like the hardest man alive. And like they have fucking flamethrowers on deck. Like, why do they have goddamn flamethrowers on deck? They're United States. That's what they're testing. They're like, how hot does the flamethrower have to be to burn snow?
To burn it.
Yeah. That's what they're testing.
All these questions we're asking still don't amount up. Whatever. Add up to the amount of questions I have as to why Kurt Russell, MacReady's hat had to be that goddamn big.
You're like, why his hat had to look that good on his head?
It's not possible.
You're like, no. No!
His mullet was enough.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
So,
and him drinking whiskey and a Coors at the same time.
That's mad.
He was mixing them.
He's chasing.
Like, this is just like water.
He's drinking the banquet beer, and he's like, ugh. He chases with some scotch.
Indeed.
So this was a John Carpenter film that has eluded you. You've seen some famous scenes in that. But what other John Carpenter films have you seen?
By far my favorite of all John Carpenter themes. Is my favorite John Carpenter theme as well. But favorite John Carpenter movie is definitely Halloween. I think that is his best. I think that movie is a tour de force. It obviously spawned several, we're talking reboots, but several reboots, several remakes, several sequels and continuations. And it's successful, as seen by the most recent remake. It was just called Halloween. The next one, what's the next? Halloween Kills?
Yeah.
Machete Kills.
That's what I think of.
Cooking Knife Kills. But it's basically it's such a good movie. The original Halloween. I watch it every Halloween. I'm terrified of it every Halloween. That theme, like that was made by John Carpenter, correct?
Yeah.
He did all the music. All that, like that's another instance of music being really effective. His shots in that movie are phenomenal, especially his one that harkens back to Psycho, Hitchcock. With the light swinging when Laurie's hiding in the closet and he's stabbing in and the light's kind of going back and forth. That's to the final scene of Psycho when he comes in. Yeah, that was actually an homage to that shot. So I love Halloween. I think it's so effective and terrifying. I think that movie is scarier than this film by far. I've seen They Live. That movie's just fun. It's a solid take on like society and like subliminal messaging. But it like takes the idea of subliminal messaging and like takes it to the nth degree. It's like let's take this to the next level.
Put on the glasses.
Yeah, it has the greatest fight scene of all time. So They Live's fantastic. I've seen some of The Fog, but never the whole way through. And I can't really say if I've seen other John Carpenter
Big
films.
Big Trouble, Little China. You I'm trying to think of.
Escape from New York. Escape from New York. What a great idea for a film.
Yeah.
Snake Plissken, hardest motherfucker alive. Yeah. Kurt Russell is easiest, easily. I've seen him in Christmas Chronicles. He plays Santa Claus. He's hardest Santa Claus alive. that's true.
Harder than Goldberg.
He's pretty hard. not gonna lie. Escape from New York. What a great idea. What a great concept. Like, President's Plane, New York, basically, Manhattan. All the bridges get taken out. It's basically being used as a giant prison, and the President's Plane gets taken out while going over it. So a president crash lands in the middle, and they send in this dangerous criminal, Snake Plissken, to get him out. But if he doesn't do it in a certain amount of hours, they have, like, a collar on him, and it'll basically kill him. Automatically, if he doesn't rescue the
president. But if he does rescue the president, he gets freedom.
He gets to go free to L.A. to vacation for Escape from L.A., which I haven't seen.
I heard they're working on Escape from Earth.
Yes? Yes!
You're about to say why, but then you thought about it.
I thought about it like Kurt Russell now.
Kurt Russell in space.
Kurt Russell with his big... big bushy beard.
His big bone tomahawk mustache.
And he's just walking around with his revolver.
Yeah.
And his noose.
Have you seen any, like, what is it, like Prince of Darkness?
Not a...
Or, what is it, Ghosts of Mars? No. Ice Cube. Or no.
Ice Cube?
Yeah.
I know that in, like, John Carpenter's later years, he didn't... do as great of work.
Nah, I don't like his later stuff as much.
I feel like I saw a movie recently where I was like, this is John Carpenter?
Was it The Ward?
Nah, it wasn't The Ward.
I don't know. I like his early stuff. All the ones you've mentioned. Big Trouble, Little China. It's great. Cheese.
I need to see that. Doesn't that movie take like a supernatural twist?
Yeah, it's like a lot of magic and things like that. Yeah, and it's meant to be cheesy for sure. John Carpenter is known for being an independent filmmaker, pretty much not working within the studio system, making what he wants to make kind of deal on low budgets, making some cult classics. The Thing was his first endeavor in the studio world with Universal money, and this movie was seen as a big old flopsky when it came
out. That's what I thought. It had a $10 million budget. It made $19 million.
And John Carpenter usually doesn't care about like that kind of thing, but this one affected him when it was seen as a failure because he thought for sure the special effects would be like regarded like put on a little pedestal.
Instead, people were like, the music sucked.
They're like, a lot of reviews were like, if you want to see a gore fest, check this out. You know, it's like, it's all about the gore. Which
is not what it's about. That's right. Now people are like, gore? Really?
Yeah. This movie has gone on cult classic status. And it has gotten the recognition it's deserved for its special effects and for its music and just tone. And it's his personal favorite film that he's made.
That's his?
That's his own personal favorite film.
Should be Halloween.
He's made.
Did he do Halloween 2?
Nah.
Okay, I was going to say that. I've seen Halloween 2, but... what about Bad Boys 2?
I think this might be his best made movie. It's not my favorite. It's up there.
What's your favorite? Halloween?
Either Halloween or They Live.
Mm.
They Live.
I need to see They Live again.
They Live's mostly out of just like...
You know, like that's rowdy fucking Roddy like, Piper.
This is just good campy shit right here. At like entertainment level, that's what I judge my movies, my personal favorite movies on, is how much I enjoy watching them. That's up there. But Halloween, mainly out of, you know, not necessarily the nostalgia of it
all.
I just
think it's one of the most effective horror movies of all time.
Yeah, it's probably the only slasher movie that still kind of gives me the willies.
Well, because it's like, you feel like it could happen, and it's like, not like... Like, Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th scares you, just don't go camping, and don't go to Manhattan or Brooklyn. Jason
and
takes
Freddy
Manhattan.
Freddy Krueger scares you, just don't go to sleep.
Yeah,
it's no
just
big deal.
Stay up. You're fine. Suck it up. But, like, if Michael Myers scares you, I mean, you just don't watch Austin Powers.
Just don't babysit kids.
I'm sorry. That was another poor joke.
Don't watch Austin Powers. I don't get it.
Mike Myers.
Jesus.
He's Austin Powers.
Time for you to go to bed.
I wish you would have got that joke. I think you're stupid for not getting it. It was hilarious.
It's actually hilarious.
Yes. But no, yeah, just, yeah, don't babysit kids, and, yeah, don't have sex. It's basically,
that's what I learned.
Yeah, that's basically horror movie etiquette, though. Like Scream and all those other films do that as well, but.
You know, just touching back on the special effects on this movie, I was about to make a comment earlier that it's surprising to me that probably the most iconic visual that I think of when I think of this movie is only in it for a couple seconds. But if you think about it, there aren't that many visual effects shots. I think there are. They're just so memorable. And it's hard to just pick one as, like, this is the most iconic. But I was going to say that, like, crab thing that crawls out of that dude and is, like, on the ceiling, has, like, the elongated neck with his head on
it. Yeah.
Like, terrifying.
That's juicy. Yeah. This whole movie's juicy.
I don't like that at all.
The dog's pretty scary, too, because it takes something that, like, everyone... You find a stray dog now, and you're like, ew.
And to a first-time viewer, not knowing anything about this movie... Like, you knew this movie's going to be juicy.
Because I've seen a lot of the iconic parts.
Some, yeah. If you were just coming in fresh, and, like, it plays off the way it does, and then, like, 15 minutes in, this dog's just like...
And like, oh, my!
Yeah. You said this was a kid's movie.
Michael Cole pops in my ear and goes, watch out, watch out!
Oh my! And, yeah, just some of those visuals will get burned into your noggin there and ruin
your night. I
don't
know why the little tentacle things bother me. I'm like, it's Majora.
It's unsettling.
Yeah, they're just like, yes. Like, and it's, and maybe it's like the feeling of like they can grab, they're like grabbing
it'll
you.
Grab you.
Yeah, it'll come out of the ground, get you, pull you in. That's what Jimmy Stewart is. He's the tentacles. You just hear like, come here, come here, come here.
Yuck.
All around you.
What if, what if at the end when the thing creature pops out of the ground and confronts Kurt Russell and his dynamite stick and like half of his head is Wilford Brimley and then there's a dog coming out here. What if the other part was just Jimmy Stewart from Vertigo? Yeah. Like, ugh.
Hey. And then there's just Gaston over there going, hello, Bill.
Gaston. And there's
another
one.
Even know I was in this movie.
And the one just shoots up. Pizza time.
It's just Toby right there.
There it is.
I would not blow up that creature. I'd be like, you deserve to live.
It's pizza time. Yeah, fuck you too. That's good. That's
how
a good one liner.
How did he survive that, by the way?
Hey, he's
Kurt Russell.
He
his beard protected him.
He coated his beard and hair in flame retardant. He was fine.
He just walked into the flames.
He just walked through it instead of under it.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's science. He's a scientist.
This is what they're researching.
Yeah. You can walk through fire, but not underneath it. That's how you get burned. That'll do it.
Thank God.
Thank God for that facility. Learned a lot while I was here.
Being a helicopter pilot and all.
But, that's just kind of... pulling it all together here, some highlights of this movie, as you mentioned earlier, was the camaraderie of the characters, as in there wasn't really any. They were at each other's throats the whole time.
Yeah. No one trusted anyone. Yeah. Like, I I feel like in the movie, like the 2012 remake, like they kind of have like relationships and like each other and stuff. Where like in this one, it's like no one gives a fuck about anyone. Everyone's like, all right, I don't trust you. Like right away, everyone's really fast to turn on each other.
Maybe that tells a lot about human beings.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like that's, I feel like everyone is having the same feel. Like they just want to survive. Yeah. So in order to survive, they're willing not to try, like not to trust anyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they each have their own personalities and they shine through. But here's an interesting question I propose to you. This is a horror movie. Typically in horror movies, you have a character that you care about, that you want them to succeed or survive, so you get afraid if they're in turmoil. But none of these characters really
not
have
even
that.
MacReady.
But why? I found myself caring for MacReady. Is it because it's Kurt Russell?
Probably. Is it I feel like it is.
He was the, because like, it was because of his hat?
Yeah, you're like, that's Kurt fucking Russell. No, he's not necessarily that likable. He's kind of an asshole. Maybe it's because he's like the leader, but he's kind of an asshole. And then he like when he kills the dog, like the dog trainer, like he's everyone's understandably on edge because they found he literally said that's a good piece of filmmaking too. Is they say how like they tear through people's clothes, and he says beforehand that here he says you tear through people's clothes, and then one of the scientists goes out and finds like MacReady's clothes in the snow, and then later on who is it, who finds his stuff in the snow, is it Childs?
No, it was the cook.
So the cook finds MacReady's stuff and thinks that MacReady has become the thing or a thing, and so they have a right to be on edge with him, and he's like willing to blow them all up. He's willing to kill everyone. So they're like understandably on edge. And then the dog trainer gets a scalpel and he's going to try and fight back against MacReady because he's trying to survive. And MacReady just turns and shoots him in the goddamn head. Yeah. And they do say like he was a human, so he was innocent. That makes you a murderer, doesn't it?
He's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Like, so he's
off here anyway.
He's just trying to survive. And at the end, he basically says, we're not going to survive, so he might as well kill these people. So he is kind of trying to play the hero in the end. But yeah, he's not that likable either.
Yeah.
I think...
There's never like that moment that like, oh, I care about this guy because he like held out a picture of his daughter back home or something like that, you know?
No. It's like all of these guys are just assholes and trying to survive. I think part of it, though, like is, like I said, it's less about like the horror and more about the suspense. Like, you don't know what's going to happen next. Like... For instance, when Hyde, the guy I kept calling Hyde,
Windows,
when he dies, like right after the shock scene, then he gets like literally like bit on the head and he's getting like flipped around. Like that was intense and like stomach turning to me, not because of the gore, because I was like, that's a human being that's getting flailed the fuck around right now, and that was more of it. Like I was like, this literally like they didn't know who it was 2 seconds ago. And now he's getting eaten. Like, that's intense. You know, it's the same with, like, Jaws. Like, like I said a couple times, like, when that shark attacks these different people, like, the very first scene with Chrissy, you never met her before. You have no reason to care for her. But when she's getting eaten by that shark and screaming and wailing, you're like, ugh. Like, you feel for that moment.
You feel. Is that what keeps you going in this movie?
It's like a terror. Yeah, it's like a terror, like an uneasiness and unknowing. So I feel like that's what it is. It's like you're, like, feeling for these humans that are just trying to survive, and they're not surviving very well.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it. Like, it's less about the horror and, like, building relationships and, like, with these characters, and more about, like, just staying on edge with them. Like, you're kind of immersing yourself, in a sense, I guess. Maybe. I'm not 100% on that, but that's kind of how I felt. Like, I'm immersing myself into this film, so I'm feeling on edge with these characters and not knowing who it is and where it is. Because I had ideas. I'm like, all right, when that guy was on the table, I'm like, I know what's about to happen, so I know he's a thing. But there were other parts where, like, I didn't know that guy was a thing.
Like when they're testing the blood with the hot.
He's like, I'll get to you last. And he touches it. And it's psst. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, that's a jumper.
Like, I didn't expect that. Yeah. So there were like parts that kept me on edge and subverted expectations throughout.
I mean, a great, I think, a great piece of writing in this movie is early in the film when they lock up Wilford Brimley Blair in the thing. He tells MacReady, he's like, "Watch out for Clark. Just watch out for Clark." So you every time you see Clark, he kind of like has this weird stare at him. He looks a little pale. The entire movie, the rest of the movie, you're like, he's a fucking thing. Like, he's acting weird. He looks weird. And then he even tries to kill MacReady. MacReady shoots him, kills him, and they test his blood, and he's normal.
Yeah.
So, like, it subverted expectations.
And Wilford Brimley was a thing.
Yeah, he was a thing.
And he was trying to basically... He's trying to basically just keep them on edge and have them kill each other. So it's pretty crazy. And what's also kind of weird about this film is the fact that, like, Wilford Brimley was a thing. While he was locked up, there were other things. Like, there literally is, like... duplicating species almost, you know. So that's something to think about as well. Like, it's like you didn't know who was who because it could be multiple people for all you knew. So that was pretty crazy, I thought. It was just so effective in terms of, like, it's and you feel secluded. It's like you feel helpless, like the location. So that
you could put
that,
yourself in this movie.
That aided to it. The feeling of isolation. It's like Alien. Like, no one can heal you. No one can heal you. No one can hear you scream in space. Much like no one can hear you scream in Antarctica.
So this is your first time watching The Thing here. Upon viewing, in full length, upon viewing, is this a movie you'd like to revisit someday? Is this one you'd put into your yearly, like, spooky fest? Runs, is this one you'd like to wait till it gets all snowy outside?
Like I said, I think this is a Thanksgiving movie. Eat all your food, get a full belly, then throw up watching this movie. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what we did. We made you're like, "What's for dinner tonight?" I'm like, "I'm making a thing." What's a thing? I said, "I don't know, but it's gonna look like a fucking thing." Yeah, and that's what we ate, and halfway through you're like, "I'm full and I'm sleepy." But yeah, is this one that you enjoyed enough that you'd see again, kind of deal?
Yeah, I don't think I'd see it again this year, maybe next year. But no, yeah, I'd definitely watch it again. I'd show it to other people. I feel like I could show old fiance this, and I think she would get a good old gross out scare from it here or there. I think she would be able to watch it all. I think the suspense would keep people on edge, like even those who don't like the not knowing. Because if I know old fiance like I know other people, this might not be their thing, but the idea of not knowing, you know, not knowing who's who and trying to figure it out and almost like playing like this detective game, would probably hook them.
Right. I think this is a movie everyone should see at least once. Yes, it's not for everyone. It is a juicy, gross out kind of movie. It is a good suspense film. But I think everyone who at least enjoys cinema, I think they should at least watch it once, endure it once if that's what it takes, because I think it's an important film, especially in the Department of Special Effects, and because this came out in 82, and these still look impressive, if not better than half the shit we see today, and it was kind of a benchmark in cinema, and I really think people should check it out, even if horror's not their genre, even if like suspense mystery's not their drama. Still worth seeing just to say you saw it. Definitely one I like to watch every couple years. And yeah, one of my favorite John Carpenter films as well. But how do we factory?
How do we factory this film?
What is a factory?
Well, in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we submit it to the movie factory. That is where we take the film and imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Same film, same story, same direction, everything like that. But who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Modern booking. So brand new director, brand new composer, brand new stars, actors, and actresses. However, for this film, all male cast, so we're working with actors today, and composer and director. So I'm going to say director-composer. We're going to recast MacReady. We're going to recast Childs. We're going to recast Blair. So Wilford Brimley. We're going to recast Kurt Russell. We're going to recast Keith David. And John Carpenter and Inicio Montecore.
Ennio
Morricone.
Morricone.
The guy who composed Good, Bad, and the Ugly and Hateful Eight. So, with that being said, The Thing, 1982, who are you getting to direct?
So, who do you pick to replace John Carpenter with one of his best films? I don't know, but I'm going a different direction slightly. Person who's only directed a couple films, however, they've both been knockouts. I haven't seen one of them yet because it hasn't come out wide release yet, but I've heard great things. I've heard pretty intense things with her new film, and I say her because it is Jennifer Kent. She directed The Babadook.
Babadook. The movie's terrifying.
Yeah, excellent.
Jennifer Kent, you said?
Jennifer Kent. Excellent Australian horror film. Just a different, different perspective. What an excellent horror film The Babadook was. Very unforgettable if you've seen it. One that'll stick to your ribs with fear. But she's great at creating horror, great at creating suspense. Her upcoming film, The Nightingale, is like a revenge piece, and it's supposed to be pretty unforgettable with some of the visuals you see, gore-wise. I've read reviews that say it's one of the goriest films we've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, some just intense with the actions and stuff. So that's what I'm going with. I'm going with Jennifer Kent.
So for mine, this film, obviously well known for its special effects, or its practical effects, rather. And I feel like to do that, I need someone who's directed a lot with these practical effects before, but also kind of had a deep dive in horror, or rather like grotesque imagery and things like that, and that's Guillermo del Toro.
Oh.
Yeah, you're like, ah, shit. Yeah, Guillermo del Toro, Pan's Labyrinth, Hellboy, and Hellboy 2, was it The Golden Army, mm-hmm. I think. He did Shape of Water most recently, won an Oscar for that. He won an Oscar for something else, Pan's Labyrinth.
I don't know if he won for that, but yeah, Pan's Labyrinth is pretty big on his resume there.
So obviously he's working now with Hideo Kojima with Death Stranding. He had a hand in PT, which was awesome. The original teaser trailer for Silent Hill, yeah. He has a great mind for horror, but also you watch Pan's Labyrinth and you're like, dude has an eye for practical effects and wants those practical effects to shine through. Guillermo del Toro, I mean, he's obviously has the directing chops with Shape of Water winning him a Best Director Oscar. And he's been nominated before. He's directed great movies. I think he'd be able to meet the standard of The Thing.
It's pretty good.
Are you going to take my idea?
I would want to take your idea, but just, however, for the sake of, we don't, and we're not prejudiced, obviously, but we don't typically mention, female directors, female filmmakers. So I'm going to fight for her, and okay. I'll flip for it.
So we got a heads. We'll go Guillermo del Toro. We'll go tails. We'll go with your Jennifer Kent. And it is heads, Guillermo del Toro. So, Guillermo del Toro directing. So, who would be our composer? John Cena.
Yeah. So, I'm going with a new composer on our list. We just finished up season one recently. We just came up on a year of doing this show, and we made a joke at ourselves that we always pick the same damn composers. So, new one to the list. Going with old Philip Glass.
He's still living.
Yeah, he's still working. He's most notably known for doing like The Truman Show, The Illusionist, Hours. He recently did Mid-90s. He's done some work in Stranger Things. My favorite of his was he did the score for Dracula, the 1932 re-release. That film originally had no score. Philip Glass and the Kronos Quartet, they put together a symphony piece to accompany that film.
Very eerie, very effective music. And he composes not just for film, but just as a composer and the writer of music and symphony pieces. Yeah, very effective use of music. He can give you the willies.
I mean, yeah, I didn't realize he was still composing.
Yeah, yeah, still doing it.
Philip Lindsay, I almost read out.
Why?
He's the running back for the Denver Broncos.
All right.
All right, keep on rolling, baby.
I'm picking Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit to do this one. That's another
Fred Durst.
That's something. For my pick, I picked Daft Punk.
No,
I mean, there's so many great composers out there, and I wanted to go with someone who's had their hand in horror. I almost literally was like John Carpenter, but.
But hey, he's still working.
Yeah, he's still music. Working.
I almost went with his son, who also worked on the new Halloween movie.
Did he? What did he do in that? Was he the director?
No, the John Carpenter's son and John Carpenter worked on the music.
Oh, really?
For the new Halloween.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Because I really need to see that movie. I know that it's not like.
It's not the greatest, but it's all right.
At the same time, I'm like, I still would enjoy to see it. Anyways, for my composer, I went with Joseph, I believe it's Bassara. He composed The Conjuring, which, obviously, mm-hmm. Very scary movie. He did The Conjuring 2, Insidious. Pretty much all the Blumhouse movies, he did. So he's done all the Insidious movies. He did Annabelle, Conjuring 2, Annabelle's... it was Annabelle's Curse or something. Annabelle's the
Comes
Beginning.
Comes Home.
Comes Home, yeah. The Curse of La Llorona. He did Aquaman, damn it. That's terrifying. The Nun. So, like, literally, like, all the big horror movies minus Aquaman, as of late, he's done.
Movie factoid. He also played the...
he also did Mortal Kombat.
Really?
Yeah.
He was the red-faced demon in Insidious.
There you go. Yeah, so pretty much like all the major horror movies mm-hmm. from the past, like, 10 years, basically?
Yeah.
Like, all those Blumhouse productions have been Joseph Bassara. He's got an eye for horror film music. Yeah. So I
he's got
like
an eye for the willies.
Yeah, I feel like he would throw in that, yeah, like,
and
bullshit.
And I'm
like,
done.
No.
Yeah.
Stay away.
Go ahead and write them down, because I'm too scared to think of anything else.
Alrighty, I'll take it. Joseph Bassara. Alrighty, so with that being said, let's go ahead and get into our actors. Blair, Childs, McCready. Let's start with Blair, played by Wilford Brimley. He's technically a smaller part, but in the end, he's like the big bad, kind of, because he's like the last living remnant of the thing.
I was like, I forgot you're in this movie.
Yeah. And he does kind of destroy all their communications. He destroys the helicopter, their way out. Who do you have to
who
play
Who do you
Blair?
Have, damn it?
To play Blair, I wanted someone that I felt could pull off the crazy old man.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones. And I was like thinking, and for whatever reason, I couldn't really find anyone that I wanted to fit the bill of, like, old, but... because Wilford... how old was Wilford Brimley in this film, would you say?
I would say he's probably in his early 60s, maybe.
Yeah, like, for whatever reason, like, I kept going to the old guy in Hateful Eight, the general. General Smithers.
Bruce Dern.
Yeah. I kept thinking of him.
Squeaky?
Yeah. Yeah, I kept thinking of him, and I'm like...
He's still doing it.
He's a little too old, though, for that role, right?
Yeah.
I even thought about Michael Caine, but I was like, hey, he's too old. Like, I was going to all these old people. I'm like, who's middle ground? I could not, for the life of me, think of anyone. So I was hoping for this one, you and I could work someone out together.
I got a couple.
You got a couple in mind? Throw them at me, and we'll work.
All right, I got three in mind. All right, you help me pick them out.
Gotcha.
Got Nick Nolte.
Bryson. Robert Redford.
I got Sam Elliott. The banquet beer.
See, he's not too old.
Driving Dodge backwards, crying. And I got old Richard Dreyfuss.
Yes, Richard Dreyfuss. They're all gonna die. I like Richard Dreyfuss because he's round enough to play that role. he did get bigger.
Yes.
I do like Richard. I like Richard Dreyfuss.
I think I like him for those three. Yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss. Talk about Richard. He'd probably act in this movie and be like, it was my worst performance ever.
Yeah. He's famous for Jaws.
Close Encounters.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Mr. Holland's Opus. But that motherfucker, he won an Oscar for something. Do you know what it was?
Piranha 3D.
Yeah. Let's see here. Richard Dreyfuss. I know he won an Oscar. It's worth mentioning. He was obviously in Stand By Me as well. Hello.
Ah, yes.
As narrator.
The voice in my head was that of Richard Dreyfuss.
He won in The Goodbye Girl in 1977. What a year for him.
He's like, I hated all these movies.
Yeah, that's Richard Dreyfuss for you.
Richard Dreyfuss as our Blair. What about our Childs? Now, Childs is an interesting character because he's like, you wouldn't consider him to be a big main character because he's kind of in the same boat as everyone else other than MacReady. He's just a side character. He just happens to be the last one alive, spoilers, with old MacReady. So it's like, who is the thing? Is any or either of them the thing? And that's kind of how it ends. It kind of ends on a cliffhanger. So with that being said, Childs kind of a big actor in this. So who would you pull to play your Childs nowadays? Who would replace Keith David?
Yeah, nobody. But honestly,
Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, I wanted to give this actor not a chance because he's well.
Give him a chance.
Yeah, he's a very successful actor, obviously, but he's known mostly for comedy. So this is a horror.
Dave Chappelle.
Horror drama.
He'll do it for free.
He was in The Star Is Born, damn it.
Yeah.
Now I'm going with Terry Crews.
Jesus.
Yeah, Cheeseburger Eddie.
I'm going with someone who can beat the fuck out of everyone.
Yeah, he would survive. Yeah, I'm going with Old Spice Man himself. And
Muscles. Sweat.
Exactly. He's known for these comedy roles, but I like to see him just tackle the drama side.
Known for his pecs and his tongue.
That's it. And, you know, I got inspiration from Alien Covenant, which I know you're not a big old fan of. I enjoyed that.
And you're like, Danny McBride did it.
Danny McBride did it. He was goddamn good in that.
He's good. That movie's terrible.
Choke yourself.
who
you got?
I went with a bigger star. I went with a bigger man.
Bigger than Terry Crews. You went Dwayne Johnson, didn't you?
Is it cooking? No. I think it's cooking.
He's like too big of a star for this movie.
Yeah, he is too big of a star. He'd end up being the main. What if we cast it like The Rock, like between Doom and
between the CGI Doom Scorpion King.
And yeah, like that Rock of that star power fame. He'd be perfect for this role.
That's still pretty big.
It is big, but
he would stick out like a sore tit.
But it'd be good because. You think because he's so big, it'd be like the Scream thing where like they're like, oh, Drew Barrymore is the lead role in this, and then they kill her off real fast. It'd be like that. They're like, The Rock's the big deal, and then you're like, oh shit, is The Rock the bad guy? The Rock, it's cooking. He could burn someone. And be like, it's cooking.
Jesus.
Smell that? You smell what The Rock is cooking?
Listen,
God damn it!
You smell that?
I've been making a lot of really shit jokes tonight.
What about Ernie Hudson? Is he too old?
Who?
The Ghostbusters. Winston.
Anthony Mackie? Anthony Mackie would be
Anthony
good
Mackie.
In this, actually.
Actually,
Anthony Mackie would be good in this role. I'm sticking with The Rock.
Anthony Mackie's not too big of a star, you know.
I gotta stick with The Rock, though, for
Jesus
reasons.
Christ. Jesus H. Christ. I'll flip
this
you for
this is a big budget fucking film.
Guillermo del Toro.
Heads The Rock. Tails Terry Crews. Ron Perlman as Childs. Tails, Terry Crews.
Thank God.
It's a fake. What about your MacReady?
Now my MacReady's gonna win.
Okay.
So, all right.
Hit me with it.
So when I say Russell Crowe, Christ.
When I say Russell Crowe, you say Kurt Russell.
When I say Kurt Russell, what do you think?
John Ruth, the Hangman.
Well, like an adjective.
Molasses. You're like, that was too quick.
As a noun.
It could be an adjective.
Yeah, sure. Molasses-like. It's an adverb. When I say Kurt Russell, what
mustache?
What descriptions come to mind?
Mustache.
And?
Mustachioed.
What mustache?
Horse laughing?
I'm looking for, like, badass. The hardest.
The baddest.
The hardest, the baddest. So that decree has been given to a current-day actor. I'm going Keanu Reeves.
Decree Montgomery.
Dacre Montgomery, yeah.
Keanu Reeves. But
you're
like, Keanu Reeves can't grow a beard. I feel like Keanu Reeves.
Yes, is Keanu beard. He's got John Wick
shit
beard.
He's got John Wick stuff.
And, can you imagine, like, that alien at the end pops up like,
he's like, fuck you too.
He's like, fuck it. Or he'd be like, you're breathtaking. And blows it up. Yeah. God, Keanu. Keanu Reeves, Matrix, Point Break, Bill and Ted, John Wick, and that.
You ruined mine, because I wanted someone who had a nice beard. Had a nice beard. I feel like can pull off the badassery. They can pull off an American accent, because they don't naturally have one, I don't believe.
Cario is.
No. But this person is fucking diabolical. That's Carl Urban. Think about that. The Rock and Carl Urban. Doom all over again. But I had it.
Rock's not in our movie.
We were this close.
Think of Terry Crews and Keanu Reeves again in
I was going to say, what were they in? What did I miss?
They're both in football movies in general.
You got Shane Falco and Cheeseburger Eddie out there.
That's just... sounds like a goddamn monster.
But I
movie.
Had Carl Urban. It was literally Doom. Like, he had The Rock and Carl Urban. I do think Carl Urban would be good for this role, though. He's very stern. He can be real serious. Watching him in The Boys inspired me to make that pick. But also thinking back on roles like Doom, on roles like...
Dread.
Dread, especially. Dread was when I was like, you know, he could pull off, like, the being silent, strong silent type. Literally. But like thinking about Doom, I'm like, he's been in this situation before. He's been surrounded by monsters. So I was like,
so it's Keanu in Constantine.
Whoa, let's forget about that. So is Keanu in Point Break.
surrounded by evil. Whoa,
the presidents. Yes, I want Carl Urban and his beard from The Boys because he's fucking diabolical.
You gonna challenge Keanu Reeves, who knows kung fu,
who turned water to wine? I'm thinking I'm back. All right, heads, Carl Urban; tails, Keanu Reeves.
I told you I won.
I dropped it.
Yeah.
All right, take two. Heads, Carl Urban; tails, Keanu Reeves.
You're breathtaking.
Look at that. Tell me what it is.
Fucking diabolical.
It's fucking diabolical is what it is. It's Carl Urban as MacReady, starring in our film. I'll tell you what. I took the majority.
Swap it up
the majority here. All right. The Thing, 1982, a remake. What it would look like today for us. Guillermo del Toro at the helm. We got Joseph Pissarro composing our music, obviously known for Conjuring and all the other Blumhouse horror films. Blair, played by Richard Dreyfuss. Childs, played by Terry Crews. and MacReady, played by Carl Urban, because he's fucking diabolical. Indeed. So, with that being said, that is our factory. Do you have a question before we go?
If you're in a similar situation and you had to pick someone to help you survive, a character in cinema, who would it be? Character in cinema.
Oh,
like, and they can't have superpowers in that.
What about like tools to help them?
Perhaps.
Like could I like be like, I want the Predator from Alien vs. Predator who's like friendly.
I'll say it has to be human.
Ah shit.
It has to be human.
You can't have superpowers?
No superpowers, human being.
John McClane from Die Hard.
Help you out here.
Yeah. And be like, hey, let's I noticed that he doesn't like heat. Let's go into the heat ducts and just crawl around for a little bit. I definitely don't live up there.
That's right. I would go Eric Kirby.
Kirby Industries? From Jurassic Park 3?
The kid.
Oh, the kid. The kid from Jurassic Park
3. He survived on that island.
I'd go with
himself.
Ben from Jurassic Park 3.
He didn't make
3.
It very long.
He didn't even get cut down from the...
Yes, right.
From the
he didn't make it very long at all. Now, my kid, he lasts a couple months.
He got dinosaur piss.
You don't want to know T-Rex how he got
piss,
it either.
Yeah. Yeah,
he'd figure it out. He'd be able to survive.
What about Matthew McConaughey? Would he go through? He go through a portal?
We're going to survive. What the fuck was that?
Bill Pullman?
Yeah,
Bill Pullman would give you a rousing speech and get you out of there.
We'd be like, yeah, and we'd freeze to death that night.
I want Paul Walker from 8 Below.
Who?
Paul Walker in the movie 8 Below, like has like dog sledding team or some shit.
All right. I want
Liam Neeson in The Gray. Easy. It's done. He survived Alaska in a sweater. He can survive
a
Antarctica.
Broad sweater.
Yeah, in
a couple
broad
bottles
sweater.
Of bourbon.
Yeah, he could survive this.
That's right. What about John Candy in Cool Runnings?
John Candy, Cool Runnings. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't.
He's
I
got
can't
that bobsledding team.
There you go. Steve Martin in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Wait. He'd just be really inconvenienced the whole time. I'm trying to get home. There's a thing chasing us.
I think you got a one with old Liam Neeson's.
Yeah, that's easy. Or you get Matthew McConaughey staring at us from Interstellar. But
what if we pick Batman?
He can't have superpowers. He's really smart.
Money's my superpower.
I'm incredibly rich, handsome, and billionaire philanthropist.
I have Val Kilmer lips.
I wish. That's a question. All right, if you got to be one Batman, let's go off of this. You're one Batman, one of the many people that have played Batman. You get to like be that persona in real life, though. You get to be that Bruce Wayne. You get to be that Batman. Who would you choose? And it could be like you could be like, I want to be George Clooney just so I look like George Clooney.
I'd be a cartoon.
George Clooney dated Stacey Keibler. Reminding
just,
you.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
I'd be a cartoon. I'd be Kevin Conroy.
He's about to not be a cartoon.
That's true.
He's about to be for real.
For real. He's about to be the best Batman for real.
Yeah. Everyone's going to be like, God damn it, he deserves an Oscar.
He's the best Bruce Wayne.
I don't like it. I might go, see, like, I'd be like, I'd go with Val Kilmer, but then, because I'm like Nicole Kidman. But then I'm in my other mind, I'm like, I know what Val Kilmer becomes. And it's not true. Pleasant. I've seen MacGruber.
You know what Michael Keaton becomes as well.
Fantastic.
The best.
Vulture.
It'll kill you and everyone you love. So that about does it for the old thingamabib.
That does indeed. So that kind of wraps us up here. We're going to close with a couple of statements here. Again, this episode is for 8-Bit Horror Fest. If you guys are listening to us for the first time on 8-Bit Geek, we really appreciate you checking us out. We really appreciate this opportunity. It was awesome. Again, if you're listening to us on ours, be sure to go over and check out the 8BitGeek.com. You'll have access to all their other shows, such as their flagship show, the 8-Bit Geek. Shows like 8-Bit Saga, where they're playing Star Wars D&D. Shows like Divas Dropkicks and Dives, where they're talking about wrestling. All fantastic shows. Kevin, Jer, Doug, great hosts, fantastic people. Really appreciate the opportunity. Again, you can check out their Discord from the website as well. It's a great community. I'm a part of it. I really enjoy being a part of that. There's a lot of great people there. They have community events. They play games together. They're really active in it as well. You can also check them out on Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you're going to gain access to things like the diner. You're going to gain access to things like extended episodes. You'll get bloopers, comic strips. I forgot to mention that for the 8-Bit Saga. So really great deals, great stuff over there. Be sure to check that out. For us, on the other hand, we are the Brothers Movie Factory. You can check us out on social media. We are at the Bros Movie Pod on Twitter. That is where we're going to be posting clips to the show. We're going to be posting updates on what we're going to be watching, polls to see what other people think we should watch. We'll also post memes that Gus makes, and we're retweeting a lot of other great shows. So be sure to check us out over on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook.
Go to Facebook, you type in the Brothers Movie Factory. Hey, we'll be there. We'll be waiting.
Sitting, yes.
Waiting with
waiting with, for vengeance.
With Brandy.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's where I post memes and messages on what we're watching each and every week. I also include links to what Ben mentioned, typically Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, And, yeah, join us, like us, share us.
Exactly. So, last but not least, if you liked what you heard, you can find us on any podcasting platform. Audio Boom is our primary source. Be sure to go over there first. Subscribe to us there. Check us out over there. You'll find links to all our other places you can find us. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Google. You can find us on iTunes, etc. Where you find podcasts, we'll be there. We'll be there and we'll be looking for you. Yeah, yeah, dig it. But until next time, brothers.
Brothers?
Brothers.
Boom, boom.
I didn't like that.